Rabbi Ariel Shoshan, who is the founding rabbi of Avas Torah in Scottsdale, Arizona. And he has many other things in his resume, but a lot of college students and high school teaching and a lot of great things. And he's actually, some of the things we talked about in the first half about Abraham, he's going to take us even deeper. So Rabbi Shoshan.
Okay, thank you.
Let's go.
This is a great honor for me. I had the opportunity to speak to this group, not all of you, but a different group in the same forum about a year and a half ago, and thrilled to be back here. The young lady who's with me is my cousin. Everybody give a hand to Marla Spivak. Yay! She's not my assistant. She's a lot of other people's assistant, I learned tonight. But we're just catching up, so she joined us, but I want to tell you so you don't say we're the spies. Okay. I want to share with you tonight a topic that I believe can be profoundly impactful on every one of our lives, and it's something that we're actually dealing with on a daily basis, and maybe we don't think about it that much. But I'll start with a fundamental question. I understand that the topic you just spoke about touched on Avraham Avinu, our first forefather, and I don't know exactly what you spoke about, but I think that there are several stories about Abraham that are found in the Torah, in the book of Bereshit, in the book of Genesis, that are very well known to a lot of people. But I don't know you, so I don't know, so hopefully I'm not speaking down to you as I explain them, because we're trying to make sure that everybody here is engaged. Probably the two most famous stories about Abraham, the two most pivotal moments in his life, are the moment when we first meet him, when the Torah describes that God says to him, Lech lecha me'artzecha u'mimoladetcha u'mibeis avicha el ha'aretz asher ar'eka. Go for yourself from your land, from your father's house, from your birthplace, to the land that I will show you. This is the very beginning, opening words of the parsha, the weekly portion that's called Lech Lecha. And this is one of the very well-known stories where Abraham emerges from Haran, originally from Ur Kasdim, and goes to the land of Israel. But much later in his life, there's another story. It's expressed in a sort of what my wife's grandfather is a very well-known rabbi and author, Rabbi Emanuel Feldman. He would describe it as a biblical echo. There's a biblical echo when we then hear much later in his life story, it says that God says to him, Lech lecha, go for yourself. El Eretz Hamoriah. It begins with the words, take your beloved son, your only one, V'lech lecha el eretz hamoriah, and go for yourself to the land of Moriah, v'ha'aleu sham le'ola, and there offer him as a fully born offering, al achad hasichim asher omar lecha, on one of the mountains that I tell you. Again, we hear lech lecha, walk for yourself, and there is the story of the binding of Isaac, the story where Abraham is commanded to do the unthinkable, to take his son's life and offer him as a sacrifice in front of God. I'm sure most everybody is familiar with these stories. Now here's the central question. It says in the Midrash, and maybe you've heard the word Midrash, a lot of people have a misunderstanding of what that word means. It's a collection of writings that was always brought down from the time of Sinai, but then collected into a written form about 2,000 years ago. So sometimes you'll hear the term modern Midrash. Modern Midrash means that somebody else made up fiction about what it says in the Torah, but they made it up in this century. The Midrash from way back when is not fiction. It's the rest of the story. And sometimes it's figurative, sometimes it's literal. There it says that Rabbi Levi asks the following question. Twice it says, Lech Lecha, go for yourself. And we've already recorded what those two are. One is the story that he should leave his father's house. The other is that he should offer his son as a burnt offering. He should slaughter his son. And Rabbi Levi says, "V'eini yodea," and I do not know which one was more difficult. I don't know which one's more difficult. So let's take a little, non-scientific poll, friends. Who here thinks that among the two tests, leave your father's house, the land where you grew up, leave your birthplace, your land, and go to the land that I will show you. Who thinks that that is more difficult than take your only son and slit his throat?
ages were both, was he, do we know when both was?
Okay, excellent question. Excellent question. I could turn the question around to you, sir. Tell me your name, by the way.
Nicholas.
Nicholas, where are you from?
New York City.
Very nice. Manhattan?
Yes.
Got it. Okay. Well, nice to meet you, Nicholas. Okay, so let me ask you this. What if I could turn it around to you? I'm not going to, but I could, and say, which ages, if I answer that, would I now say, oh yeah, that makes, yeah, it makes it more clear?
Well, if he just started, I mean, it might be easier to sacrifice his son if he had had a extremely long and rewarding relationship with God versus being asked cold to leave, I mean,
Fair enough. Okay, so these stories take place.
If you ask a teenager at the wrong time, you don't want to leave your dad's house. You know, I mean, I just got it. It's the easiest thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay,
that's why.
So Abraham is 75 years old when he's told to leave Haran and go to Israel.
Okay.
75. He's 137 when he's told to take his 37-year-old son and slit his throat. Okay, so it doesn't really move the needle too much. Right? Okay, so now, who thinks it's more difficult to pass the test of slaughtering your own son? Does anybody have any doubt which one of these is more difficult? Anyone? No. How then can one of the great sages of the Talmud have a doubt? Was he just a callous fool? Was he not paying attention? How can there be any doubt which of these tests is more difficult? No matter what we'll come up with, if I would tell you, you'll never be allowed to come to the United States again. You have to go to a place, I'm telling you, you've got to leave, and I'm not telling you where you're going, but wherever you go, you'll have to go. That could be very difficult, actually. We can understand that is very difficult. But could it possibly be more difficult than killing his only son? Seems impossible. Now, another question is, why does it say Lech Lecha at the beginning of both of these tests? Lech means to go. Lecha means for you. The great medieval commentator Rashi says that for you, where it says lecha, means letovatcha ulahana'atcha, for your good and for your benefit. So in other words, leave your father's house for your good and for your benefit. Okay. Because God then says, I'm going to build you into a big nation there. But what's the go for your good and your benefit about slaughtering your son? Tell me your name.
Jason.
From where?
Albany, New York.
Albany, New York. Now you're, that's
I'll,
like...
I'll be moving to New York, actually, next... when I graduate.
So. Fantastic. No, the reason I'm getting excited about Albany, New York is because Marla's grandmother is from Albany, New York, so that's where our bond starts. Yeah, go ahead. So,
yeah, I think it says Lech Lecha because it's like, take a leap of faith and believe in God, like, but you, and you have to do that yourself, like, right? Does that make sense? Like, take... like, go yourself, like, take a leap of faith and believe in God... Yeah, you got to do it personally.
Okay, very good. Now, when you say it like that, personally,
yeah.
what is the antonym of that personally? What if it wasn't that like that? What's the other side of that?
I don't know.
You're saying personally as opposed to?
Like, I don't know.
Okay, go ahead. Tell me your name.
Donna.
From where?
West Orange, New Jersey.
Okay, awesome. Somewhere like in like the off 16, 17 range in there on the turnpike? You don't know. Oh, that's okay. That's okay.
I think that the opposite of going for yourself, I think, can be going by force, especially when you resent it.
Okay. Okay, good. Good. We're going to come back to that. Please, your name?
Danny.
Danny from?
Long Island, New York.
Okay. Anybody from the West Coast? West half of the country from?
Los Angeles.
And?
Los Angeles.
San Diego.
San Diego. It's all California. Okay, gotcha. Good. All right, so go ahead, Danny, please.
I would say the opposite is like collectively and like with the community, but that requires you to have, you'd be influenced by other people. You'd have to convince them. If you go by yourself, it says a lot more because you're doing it if you want to go or if you don't want to go, but other people's opinions about doing it would influence you.
That's huge. That's right. You're all right. What you're really saying, tell me your name again, I'm sorry.
Jason.
What you're saying is emerge. Emerge. Become who you could be. Not by somebody else telling you what to do. and not within the framework of the simple, you know, like, this is just the way it is, because this is how what we do. This is what my folk, we do. Right? Emerge. Be great. That's what's being said in both cases. Emerge. Lech lecha. Emerge. But how is it that anybody can have any doubt as to which test is more difficult? And then I want to say one more thing, we'll come back to this at the very end. Why is it expressed in terms of walk? Lalechet in Hebrew, lech, lech lecha, is walk. Why does God express both these commands, and the command to circumcise himself at the age of 99 is also mentioned as hitalech lefanai ve'yetamim, walk in front of me and be perfect, be complete. Why so much walking? You had an answer to the earlier question? Tell me your name.
Ilana.
From?
Cherry Hill, New Jersey.
Cool. That is exit 4, by the way. That one I know. What? That's exit 4 off the turnpike.
You're right.
That's for sure. Yeah. Go ahead.
Just to go back to the whole test, you know, which test is more difficult, because I can't believe that one of the great sages would sacrifice his son, I subscribe to the point of view that Abraham was equally testing God as God was testing Abraham. I believe that he was never going to sacrifice his son.
Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough. We don't necessarily share that view, but that's okay. That's okay. You know, that's good. But I hear where you're coming from. Go ahead. Your name, please.
Sam.
Sam from?
Boca Raton, Florida.
Got it. Okay, cool.
I don't agree with that at all, meaning Abraham, if he is such a great sage, then his whole existence is to be a god, not necessarily his son.
Very good.
If
so what you're saying is...
the greatest sage ever, or I don't know if he is ever, then everything he lives, breathes for is for Judaism and for God and like monotheistic like religion, everything. So like his duty on life in life is to like do what God says, so, like it's whether it's leaving or sacrificing his son. I do think sacrificing his son is harder, but I don't think he wasn't going to not do it.
Okay, I'm with you. That's a beautiful you brought beautiful interpretation there. Yeah, last point now, please. Your name?
Jeremy.
From?
South from New York.
Got it. Okay, that's like Muncie.
Yeah. Very close. Well, it's not that I wouldn't believe that Abraham did not kill his son, but it's more the fact that innately he probably knows, you know, taking someone's life is wrong. So, like, how could God, you know, how could he become great by killing someone?
Okay, so that's part of what makes that test even more difficult.
Yeah.
If we do take it literally, if we do take it that he really was challenging him, do this. One should second guess God on that. And yet, somehow, he said, I submit to your higher intelligence around it. Ultimately, it has a good ending. Because, in fact, that's not what God wanted. But that is a tough one, especially when you add to it that God said to him, through this son will be all your generations. And he had not yet birthed any kids. So how do you go back and forth? Okay, I have to say yes, so go ahead. Please, tell me your name, please.
Lauren.
From?
Stamford, Connecticut.
Stamford, Connecticut? Yeah, okay, good.
I'm just thinking that maybe it was the idea that the leaving his home was a sacrifice that he had to make for himself, but sacrificing his son was a sacrifice that he had to make for God.
Okay, well, what I'm gonna suggest is that they are both sacrifices that he has to make for himself. But that's what the key lecha means. The lecha means to become the person you can be. And in order to explain this, what does it mean to become the person that you could be? And how could anybody, again, back to the major question, which is, how can anybody think that the first test is more difficult than the second? But let's examine this in terms of, and everything I'm sharing with you, by the way, it comes from a work called Nisivo Shalom, which is the writings of the late Slonimer Rebbe. There are many, many Hasidic sects that are all over the world, and the Slonimer Hasidim, their main place is in Jerusalem. They also have a presence in Bnei Brak. But this Slonimer Rebbe, his name was Rabbi Noach Shalom Brzezovsky. He passed away in the year 2000 in the summer, and he's worldwide known as by the name of his work, Nisivos Shalom. So this presentation is based on his writings. He says that the famous Kabbalist Rabbi Yitzchak Luria, who's known as the Arizal, wrote that every condition in your life, every detail in your life, is custom made for you. That from the beginning of time till the end of time, there are no two people who are exactly the same, and there are no two people who have the same situations that they find themselves in. And whatever your situation is for you custom made so that you can reach your yud, which means your personal destiny, your personal potential, everything. If you're born into a poor family, then you have the tests of the poor, maybe not to steal. If you're born into a rich family, you have the tests of the rich, maybe not to look down on poor people, maybe to use, you know, there's a general principle in Jewish law that you have to give away 10% of what you earn, maximum of 20%. But it says in later writings that if you're super rich, you can give away more. How will somebody justify, let's say you know somebody who makes $100 million and he already had $600 million in the bank. Because most people who make $100 million already had $600 million in the bank. So he makes $100 million and he pats himself on the back. I gave away, you know, $5 million. That person has his own test. Why doesn't he give away $100 million? He doesn't need any pennies of it. That's a very tough test. Sometimes the tests of the rich are as hard as the tests of the poor. If you're tall, your obligation is to help people who can't reach. If you're short, maybe your obligation is to help people who can't reach down there. Everybody's life is custom made to realize your own potential. And the thing that helps us realize our own potential is passing tests. This is a very important idea. This is really a crucial idea. Because we don't live normally in our own frameworks with this default understanding. In fact, one of the main arguments on national social policy is that if you can prove that enough people want to do something, then it's okay. But maybe a lot of people want to do things that are not okay. They're not in their best interest. In other words, the fact is that we all wake up in the morning sometimes desiring to do something that's not in our best interest. Every one of us. Sometimes they're big, sometimes they're small. I'll give you an example. Is it legal to overeat? Of course it's legal to overeat. It's also terrible for you. Overeating, I'm sure, is probably the number one cause of death in America, is overeating. One would have to guess in the long run if you looked at it the whole way. I'm not suggesting you legislate against overeating, but I am suggesting don't overeat. Do what's best. Do things that are in your interest. So we come to tests in our lives. Some of them are big, and some of them are small. The big ones are super tough. Small ones don't seem as tough. When God commanded Abraham to leave his father's house, to leave his land, and to leave his birthplace, what he was commanding him in was not just a one momentary thing. What he was saying to him when he said, leave all those things, was emerge, as Jason pointed out. And as Danny pointed out, very importantly, emerge from the cult, from the pack, to become who you could become. People, all of us, tend to make decisions based on assumptions of the way it's supposed to be because of all kinds of rationales. One of them is the land in which you were born. When God said to Abraham, leave your father's land, leave your land, what he was saying to him was, if you want to become who you can become, it's not good enough to say, well, but the custom of my country is that way. I'll give you an example. We are deeply affected, every one of us, by the country in which we live. We have certain positions that we consider sacrosanct, even though they are not specific to any kind of real rationale or any kind of real morality, that just are the way it's been in the land in which we grew up. One example would be, anybody here like love soccer? Yeah? Were you born in America? Yeah? Parents born in America? Were you influenced by your parents who were not born in America to love soccer?
Yeah.
Okay. Why don't the rest of you love soccer?
Football's better.
Because football's better. What makes football better?
It's more exciting.
It's more exciting.
It's the modern day gladiators.
It's modern day gladiators. You know that that's totally untrue, right?
What do you mean?
You don't like football because it's more exciting. Let me be clear. I love football.
Oh, I know.
And I don't care about soccer
about.
At all.
I know you're
talking okay?
about, yeah.
But it's not because it's more exciting.
Yeah, it is.
For me, it
no,
is.
No, no. One second. Where'd you grow up?
Indiana.
Indiana. What city?
Indianapolis.
Okay. So you grew up in a good time with a good quarterback, you know, in a good town filled with excitement. Mm-hmm. No question about it.
So right.
And if you'd been born in Manchester, you would like the most popular sports team in the whole world.
Obviously, yeah.
Okay? Because the most popular sports team in the whole world by far is Manchester United Soccer.
Turn okay? to football.
They are not. They're not the Dallas Cowboys of Europe. The Dallas Cowboys are the Manchester United of America. We come with assumptions because we're born in certain places. That's just the way it goes. All of us. In America, you assume that everybody's entitled to 2 days off on the weekend. Who says? As far as I can tell, it says in the Bible, 6 days you shall work and one and the seventh you shall rest. Who says? Maybe it is true. I don't know. I'm not going to get it. Maybe that's true. But you know who says? The country in which you were born. And if you go and you say, you know what I'm going to do for my whole life, 80 years to 120 years? I'm just going to do what they say I'm supposed to do by popular assumption of the society in which I live. You'll never be great. Never emerge to be who you could be. That's what it means, leave me artzicha. Leave from your land. Now, what does it mean to leave me base avicha, from the house of your father, I mean beit avicha? There's other things that we say. That's just the way it is in my family. In my family, we do it this way. You know, I knew a fellow who once said to me that he's very inspired to try his best to keep God's Torah. He's very inspired. He believes the Torah was written by God and given at Sinai and that the transmission throughout the generations has been correct. And he believes that the commandments of the Torah are an obligation on him. But in his family, they root for Ohio State. And in his family, the custom is college football on Saturday afternoon. So I'm sorry, God. I will not be available for Shabbat because in my family, we root for Ohio State. I mean, look, you can take all kinds of judgments. You can make all kinds of judgments one way or the other about the whole picture of whether you should keep Shabbat, whether you shouldn't, whatever. I, for one, I'm a proponent. Okay, but that it's because my grandfather wore scarlet and gray, I can't keep Shabbos. Because you know, that's the way we do it in our family. And what if the way we do it in our family is we kill the Jews? And what if the way we do it in our family is we blow up buildings? You can never be who you could be unless you decide, I'm leaving Beit Avicha. When he said to Abraham, I want you to teach the whole world the truth forever. And think about this person we're describing whose impact is being described 3,700 years after his life. That's pretty impactful. But it wasn't until he stayed and said, I'll do what is maybe right, maybe wrong, but on the assumption that it's right because it's my family's way. For you to emerge to be who you could be because there's no one like you. You know, I have an identical twin brother. That's true. It's not just a prop for this story. Okay? I have an identical twin brother. You do? Awesome. That's like a real special club, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel bond right away. So, the thing is like this. He and I have our own unique lives, our own unique destinies. If I were to say this is the way it is because my brother does it that way, even that shared DNA, like we were roommates before we had rooms. Okay? You know, even that. You can never become who you're supposed to be. Every person has their own unique destiny. So you have to emerge. Whether it's from the land or from the Father's house. And the last one is, mimoladitcha, from your birth. Meaning, if the Father's house is the nurture, then the birth is the nature. You say, look, here's the deal, friends. I can never become somebody who's nice because I'm mean. I was born into a mean family. I come from a mean place. Right? Like, you know, you ever hear somebody say, I'm not going to knock any, you can finish the sentence. You get to decide what place I'm talking about, okay? Don't expect me to, like, say good morning to you. I'm from... You finish the sentence.
New York.
A New Yorker said it. I didn't say it. Okay? From New York. Come on. Forget about it. I don't have to say hello to you. That's lame. And if you'll say, in our family, the reality is that all of our cousins, everybody, we're just like, you know, we're lazy, or we're not grateful people, or whatever it is. I was born that way. Well, guess what, chap? Get going. Pass the test of your default position. That's very hard to do. But that's what the imperative is. Go ahead, Sam, from Boca Raton.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I feel like when people say those things, it's because they're insecure, like things aren't the same way. It's what they've always known, like it's not going to work out. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. Sure. Life is filled, particularly in the other kinds of tests I'm going to describe in a minute. Life is filled with those moments of immense trepidation. If I change the course of my being, what's going to happen? That is a very important thing. Go ahead, tell me your name.
My name's Allison.
From?
From New York.
Yeah, okay, go ahead, Allison. Did Jason offend you?
Not at all.
Okay,
I
go ahead.
Agree with him sometimes.
Okay.
Not about me, but about other people.
Yeah.
So I, like, agree with everything you're saying, and it makes total sense to me, and I think a lot of us probably have to do that in our own lives a lot already, but what then do we do with the predeterminations of our family or where we're from or the way we were raised that we don't consider to be apparently wrong? Like how did we decide that those things were wrong? Is it just if they're, like, against God's commandments? Or, like maybe no one in your family went to college, so you don't think you're going to go to college. Like, it would be a betterment for yourself, so you should try. Like, how do you deal with that?
I want to say something very important to answer your question, which is that the overwhelming majority of what we get from our families is out of this world fantastic. Not just even in the middle place. It's awesome. Your parents are great people, I'm sure. I support the idea of children cleaving to their parents. In fact, one of the biggest mistakes of this country really is the assumption that at 18 years old, you have nothing to learn from your parents anymore. And that's a basic assumption of Artsakha, of the land in which you grew up. That, mom, dad, I'm out of here, I'm going to trust my professors. Which is the worst part of it. That's like really double whammy on that one. Okay, so now, your parents are fantastic. And in fact, most of what they give you is right. But you sometimes come to a conclusion. It's based on your study. It's based on your seeking. And the example you gave, which is a non-religious example, so it's a really powerful one, is exactly right. If somebody who grew up in the inner city says,
my dad's a mechanic and I'm going to go be a mechanic.
That's it. Or like, they're going to call me a sellout because I go to college. I once heard this on the radio. A caller calls in and he says, he was an African-American caller, okay, from the inner city. And I'm not comfortable telling you what he said. That because he wanted to go to college, they called him all kinds of names. But what if he determines that that's the right thing? You know, that's the right thing to do. Of course he should do it. But if you will only live in the space of Artzicha, Beis Avicha, Moladitcha, you'll never emerge to be the great person you can be.
More about like opening your mind up to the possibility of things that you weren't introduced to or that aren't your way? Because, like, I don't know, what if the alternative really is better than my parents taught me? Is it about, like, me branching out and taking all of the options into account and then deciding on the best way? Or, like, what do you do if you don't know?
No, I do not think that last point. What I mean to say is this. Right here, what we're zeroed in on is having the courage when you do know.
Okay, but what do you do about when you don't know?
When you don't know?
Like, there are plenty of people who don't think college is an option, for example.
Right. So can you imagine if you could use your destiny to give them that gift of telling them that it is an option to them? How fantastic would that be? Okay. So beautiful. So you have a sense of what you could offer the world. Okay. Go ahead. Did I answer your question?
So it's up to somebody else to show them.
Sometimes that's the thing. In other words, but one thing I would say to you is study the Torah. In other words, if you come to the conclusion, and that's a big if, and a worthy discussion, I'm sure you've had it or you will have it. If God wrote the Torah. Like, and I'm going to come to your question soon. For example, if I knew God said it to me, there was no doubt I knew he told me to leave my father's house, or I knew he told me to take my son's life. But I knew it. Like, if I knew, maybe you don't know that kind of thing, because God doesn't talk to you directly. But let's say you know that you're supposed to stop eating a certain thing you like to eat. Right? Let's say you know that. I'm making a big assumption now. Let's say you know that. So then, do you have the courage to do that? Once you do know? Because that's how you become l'cha, that's how you become me. That's l'hana'atcha l'tovatcha. That's how you become your own unique personal potential. It's through passing those kinds of tests. Okay, you had a question. I'll we could talk after maybe a little bit.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I just
tell me your name, please.
I'm Maya.
From?
Newton, Massachusetts.
Okay.
Please. I just always think of Judaism as being like very, very traditionally based and very like to do with your family and to do with where you come from and like especially location, I think. Like Israel obviously is huge and like it's just hard. I always have thought of it as the opposite of being very rooted in your family traditions and your where you come from and everything. So to like reject it, I don't really get how. I totally see how what you're saying is Jewish value, and I totally see how like being connected to Jewish value, but I can't really put them together.
Yeah, I'm glad you're asking. It's sort of like what I answered before, which is that I'm not trying to tell you reject it all. I had a teacher in high school who said reject it all. She was an anarchist. Okay, she really was. I have no idea how she got the gig in a private Jewish high school, honestly. Okay, but that's not my message. My message is actually for your own self-actualization within a framework of truth. I'm not saying approach everything with the default position that it's a lie. I'm saying when you have come to a conclusion within a framework of truth that my own personal potential lies here, be great. Take that step forward. Emerge. Okay, this is going to be the last question for now. Well, you know what? Let me take her question. We've already heard from you. Tell me your name.
Rachel.
From?
Scarsdale, New York.
Okay. Let's hear you.
So you're talking about there are things from our family that we get that aren't necessarily... Excuse me, I'm sorry, I can't talk right now.
Okay.
That aren't necessarily good or right, and that we must branch out at some point. How does that conflict with an idea, I know this isn't related, but of honoring your parents and honoring that connection, but at the same time going out and branching out, if you think what they're doing is wrong, so your Ohio State example of I'm not going to do Shabbos because we watch college football on Saturdays, how does that conflict those two ideas?
I'm glad you asked that question. There's a two-part answer. The first part is so crucial. Now, the first part is that a person has to be extremely careful about ever not listening to their parents. Meaning, you're right. You have to listen to your parents. And it could be confusing sometimes when you learn new things in college, learn new things from rabbis, whatever it is. You get new understandings. But the Torah's position is, well, my parents don't know as well, so I just do whatever I want from now on. No, the Torah position is, listen to your parents, follow their guidance. They're great people. I have no doubt about that. But what happens when, in fact, the instruction of my parent opposes the instruction of God? Okay? So regarding this, the verse says in the parsha called Kedoshim. Okay? It's in the middle of Vayikra. In fact, this is in chapter 19. Okay? It says, Yishimo ve'aviv tiro. Each person should revere his or her parents. Ve'et shabtotai tishmaru. And you shall keep my Shabbos. Ani Hashem, I am God. So what is the connection between revere your parents and keep my Shabbos? So again, the medieval commentator Rashi there says, but he's quoting the Talmud in Kiddushin, says that when the reason why God says you shall keep my Shabbos right there is that if your parents tell you to desecrate it, then you listen to God. Because I am God, concludes the verse. And then it says a beautiful phrase. Because he and they are commanded in my honor. In other words, there's a hierarchy. There's a pecking order. So if, in fact, one comes to a conclusion but that's a tough conclusion to come to, careful, honor parents, but if one, in fact, one comes to that conclusion, then of course we follow the will of God. It's like if your parents tell you to violate the law. You know, my father told me to take the gun and shoot that guy. That's no excuse. Right? So it's similar to that. Now let's go back to the original question, because we've been in the world of Lech Lecha. Once we understand the incredible difficulty of what it means to emerge on a daily basis from the default positions of our lives and be great, to chart your own path, to make yourself great, to overcome your temptations, whether the root of those temptations is land, father's house, your basic nature. And I want to go back to this basic nature for a second. I had a friend who went to study in the yeshiva. And over the time, I was with him for 2 years there. Over the time, he went from being what I would consider a pretty not nice guy to a pretty nice guy. He worked on himself. So near the end of the second year, somebody tried to wake him up. He was sleeping. And he told me, wake me up at such a time. He woke, and when he was waking up, he was like, no, I'll kill you. Get away from me. You make me sick. Da, da, da. He was just screaming at him. And somebody says, Shoshan, you know this guy for so many years. Like, what's wrong with him? Why is he so mean to me? I said, don't you see the beauty in this? His default is that mean guy. But you never see it when he has the chance in a waking space to work on himself. I know that guy you just tried to wake up. That's who he was a year and a half ago, 3 years ago, 5 years ago. People, we have our basic nature, we have to overcome it sometimes. I want to taste this and taste that and eat this and eat that and cheat this way and cheat that way. Hey, that's not okay just because you want to. So it's hard to do that. Let me stay on this point and then I'll take questions after. Rabbi, just tell me about timing. What's our...
15 minutes.
Okay. There'll be more time for questions. So it's very hard to be the person you could be on a daily basis. But sometimes in life, there's other kinds of tests. And in fact, the Slonim Rebbe says there's two major archetypes of tests. There's the Lech Lecha test, which we've described at length. And then there's the Akedah, the Binding of Isaac test. The Binding of Isaac test takes place only several times in your life. The moments in our lives when something is in front of us that is a huge challenge. And it's scary, like was described earlier. It's frightening. You don't know, is this the chart? Is this the path I want to chart in my life, or this is this the way? And it's confusing, but yet you know, and you come to the final clarity. Like somebody says to you, how many times in life does somebody say to you, you know, either you blow up the building or I'll take your life? Never. And hopefully we're never tested in that way. But we have things like that that are like huge and big, but I know the difference between right and wrong. Somebody says, my buddies, they're willing to go, they're going to go and rob a bank, they want me to come with them, whatever it is. Maybe it'll never happen to you, it never happened to me either, but I'm saying, like that kind of thing. You know when the big tests in your life come, and there's only a few of them. You're dating the wrong person, and you realize, I gotta sever this. It's not good for me. Or you're dating the right person, and you realize, if I want to spend the rest of my life with her, why don't I get going with the rest of my life? So, let's go. Let's make this happen. And that's scary and frightening. And then we do it. Or we don't. The test of the Binding of Isaac was, yes, incredibly hard. But in a sense, it was really momentary. God said, do this. You're facing the command of God and the love of the Son. And the command of God is the command of God. So you do what God says to you. And had it actually led to the death of Isaac, he would have followed God's command, and then that test is over. But when somebody says to you, don't overeat, so you have that test at 9 a.m., and that test revisits itself at 11, and they see you again at 3, right? And, oh, and then again at 6, then again at 9.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. You know? Then again at 9:15. Okay? So there's two different kinds. There's the big mega tests, and there's the little nagging tests. I want to give you an illustration in my own life. When I was basically around your age, I was 19 years old, I had decided to study in a yeshiva in Baltimore for 2 months. I came there before going on an academic scholarship to one of America's well-known universities. And I really enjoyed it there. It was a good fit for me. Like, it was really a good fit. And I said, you know what? I could stay here. But it wasn't what my parents wanted. It wasn't what my siblings wanted, except for one. And it was deemed wrong by the people I loved. They said, you know what? In our house, this is the way we do it. We go to a four-year university. We get that kind of education. I said, but I can get a four-year university education while I'm in the yeshiva. No, that's not a real education, whatever it may be. That's not for you. You know that a lot of people who love rabbis to a point. Say, I love rabbis, but I don't want my son to become one. So that's kind of like my story a little bit. And it's a very personal thing. When I was facing the decision whether or not to go off, to remain in Baltimore, or go to the university I was supposed to go to, actually everything was on the line. The basic message from my family was, this is not okay with us, to the point that if you do it, you're on your own. I don't even like to talk about it, because even now, almost 20 years later, it's painful. It was very painful. But I had a sense of what the right thing to do was, and that it was worth enduring the pain to do that right thing. And I asked my teachers, and I asked my closest friends, and other family members, and I had clarity that that was the right thing to do. So that's what I decided to do. That's what I decided to do in spite of the fact that, in the words of one sibling, you may not be able to come to my son's bar mitzvah. But that's only because this other person will want come, and you'll be on the out. I knew it was right, and I decided to do it. It was very hard, extremely hard. So what was I willing to sacrifice to study the Torah day and night? Everything. Now, on the other hand, in the yeshiva that I studied in, dinner was at 6:30 every night. So you say, what does that have to do with the story? Well, dinner was at 6:30 every night. And if you go down to the dining hall at 6:30 from the study hall, you have to stand in line. And you eat at about 6:37. If you go at 6:20, you eat at 6:21. If you go at 5:50, because there's no attendance on the end of there, you eat at 5:51. The right thing to do is to stay until 6:30. And why wouldn't everybody willing to stay until 6:30? I mean, you were willing to give everything for your whole life, all the people you love and money, and you're willing to sacrifice it all so that you can study the Torah. Seems like a really small thing to be willing to study the Torah till 6:30 and then get delayed to eat 7 minutes. But I got to tell you, in the hundreds of nights that I was there, the number of times I stayed till 6:30 was probably under 10. I couldn't pass that test. I couldn't stand in line. It sounds farcical. I couldn't stand in line and let the dinner hour that we had get so short that then I would have to shortly be back by 7:40 to study with a high school boy. I just couldn't do that. It was too long, but since lunch, I had all kinds of excuses. Lunch was up 1:00. I was hungry already. I got studying to do for college, whatever. But the temptation, the combined temptations to leave the base matters, the study hall before 6:30, overcame me, and I lost almost every day. How could anybody do that? But I'll tell you the answer, friends. You know the answer. The answer is that many of us know that the Torah commands us that if, God forbid, you have to leave the Jewish religion to remain alive, the Torah commands you, you're not supposed to remain alive. Okay, there's 3 cardinal transgressions. And one of them is idol worship. So that if you have to, if somebody threatens your life to live as a non-Jew, you take a bullet. And many of us could pass that test. I believe that I could pass that test. I should never be tested. So therefore, I'm willing to die for the sanctification of God's name. If you think that you're willing to die for the sanctification of God's name, and I hope the answer is you are, ask yourself this. Which is easier? Dying in the name of God? Or living in the name of God? Is it easier to take that bullet, which is giving up everything? Or is it easier to stay alive but follow all the rules of this same God that you believe in. That's why you're willing to take the bullet. It's a tough one.
Yeah.
You got the point?
Yeah.
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
That's the difference between the binding of Isaac, which albeit is huge and difficult, and the Lech Lecha emerge to become you, not just at 9 a.m. tomorrow, but at 9 a.m. tomorrow, and at 9:01, and 9:02, and 9:03, and 9:04, and 9:05, all the way till 120 years. Emerge to be you. But here's the thing, friends. This is the critical point of the whole night. You can only be the great, magnificent, individual person that you can become. You, Jason, can only become the Jason of the heavens, of who you could be, if you pass both kinds of tests. If on the 3 or 4 or 5 occasions in your life that you have to make a turn, you make that turn. And if on the daily basis, you are great. I used to use as an example all the time in this, and I'm not going to do it now because it's the myth is blown up, but I used to always use as an example regarding this Lance Armstrong. And always. I get this class for years, and I would say, here's a guy who was working on winning next year's tour the day after last year's tour in terms of what he ate and how much sleep he got. He was living for that victory. So now the myth is blown up, though.
Yep.
Okay, but you understand that in order to be who you could become, the world-class you, it's by making the correct turns the few times they face us, albeit if they're challenging, and by overcoming our temptations on a daily basis, an hourly, momentary basis, to emerge to be the people we can be. So once you have that clarity, that those are the two kinds of tests, not so clear which one's more difficult. Not so clear. But I want to urge you about this, because the overwhelming majority of human beings do not live with even a framework of tests. They don't think anything is a test. They are on a seafood diet.
See it and eat it.
You see it and you eat it. That's right. They don't think that it's wrong to listen to such and such a radio station because they're just speaking gossip about other people. So I better turn it off. They don't question what they do at all. They just follow their own, you know, like Toucan Sam. Follow the nose. You know, it smells good until you find it, then you eat it. It looks good, it's tempting in some way or another. It's my upper hand over my colleague, and I'll get the credit. All kinds of elements, like, they don't live in the framework of tests at all. But if we'll accept upon ourselves that the only way to be the great people we can be is to lift weight that's hard for us to lift, then we'll be the great people that we can be. And then, that's the secret to Abraham. The secret to Abraham is 3,700 years later, we're still talking about the same guy. Because he was not just said to God, you know, I'll just hang out with my dad. You know what? I'll just stay here. I'll just do this. That's too hard for me. No. He took it on. And I'm going to conclude with this last thing. Why is it expressed in the language of walking? All of Abraham's major tests are expressed in the language of walking. The answer is very simple. Because it's all one step at a time. The only way you can become the great person you could become when you're 70 is if you're working on it now, but you can't become the 70-year-old version of you. You can only become the 21-year-old version of you, 22-year-old version of you. That's what's in front of you now, the next rung on the ladder. And so that's what you have to do. When Abraham was told at 75 be great, he was told in a different way at 99 be great. And at yet a different way at 137. And never did he say, look, man, I'm retired. I'm 75. I don't grow anymore. I'm 99. Can you give me a break? I'm 137. He said, okay, that's the next rung on the ladder. Keep on walking. Keep on climbing. And if you do that, and you don't worry about what's, you know, 20 steps ahead, then we can emerge to be the people that we hope to be. Okay. Any questions? Please, Danny.
Okay. My question is just, I guess I still don't understand, is there any factual, like, basis for what his reservations were between leaving his land and killing his son? Like, I still don't understand how there was such a conflict in choosing between.
Okay, it's very important. The answer is there was no conflict for him. In other words, he was 75 in one story and 137 in the other. So there's a 62-year gap. between the two stories. The conflict is for the analyst who says, I don't know which one was harder.
Oh, okay.
The analyst is saying, I don't know which one's harder, 1,000 years later. You know? Okay. And so then he's looking at it. So we started the question, how can anybody not know which one's harder? But once you understand just how hard it is to live up to being who you could be, then maybe it is actually harder than a momentary, incredibly difficult test. Yes. Tell me your name again.
Ilana.
Ilana, yeah.
I was thinking a lot about what you said about taking a bullet for God.
Yeah.
Just to clarify, do you mean like someone would go up to you and say, like, it's you or God, what do you choose? Or is it more of a, this is one of God's teachings. It's, you know, it's you or break this law.
It depends on the law. Depends on the law. But it could be either of the two. So let me explain it, okay? Let's say somebody said to you, I'm going to take your life if you don't accept upon yourself my God as your Savior. And you stop living as a Jew. You'll be able to live. You'll have, you know, weekends in the park and all the good things in life, but you'll never be allowed to be Jewish again. Okay, so in that sense, the Torah says that for that one is supposed to give up his or her life. Now, I want to explain this, a very important idea. This actually comes from the anarchist I spoke of before, my 11th grade and 12th grade English teacher. May God rest her soul. She's since passed away. She was really crazy, really crazy. So she once said to us that the unexamined life is not worth living. I think that's Socrates. I think. Is that right? Yeah. So I look at it a little differently. It's not. It's the same, but it's a little different. I forgot which of my teachers said this. If you don't know what you'd be willing to give your life for, then you don't know what you're living for.
If you don't stand for something.
It cannot be that the whole purpose for being alive is to be alive. The purpose for being alive is to do something. So therefore, it must be, logically, that life is less valuable, even though, by the way, the very important thing, don't get misunderstood, Judaism is more of a passionate defender of life than any other world system. And that's why we don't go for the financial question of, you know, whether somebody's last hours are worth that amount of money that it would cost the healthcare system or whatever it is. That's meaningless to the Jewish worldview. Life is of crucial importance. But, having said that, if it's on the top of the totem pole, then what are we doing here? Right? So, the Jewish angle is, a person should give their life up for either idol worship, which that would be a form of this story I told you, or for forbidden sexual relations, or for to murder another person. In any of those three things, if somebody says to you, you got to do this or I'm going to take your life, then God commands us to live up to that test. We should never be tested that way. Okay? Did I answer your question? Okay. Any other questions? Thanks for listening, dear friends.
If you want to go to Shabbos in Scottsdale, they can come, right?
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
I'll tell you that I'm